It's up!
TYT. I'm not Anna Kasparian or Jane Kuger. I'm Francesca Fiorentini. That's Wozni Lombre. This is a remix of Thursday. Our trusty leaders are out getting a much needed break. Actually, Jank will be here in the second hour along with Jordan Yule. But for now, you got us. We got news. There is a lot to get to. This has been an emotional day for me, Woz. Just the news feels. It's the news and the full moon just kind of messing with my spirits right now. But how are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. This is my last day in New York. So just, nice. You know, the weather finally broke. It's not raining cats and dogs. The sun is shining, as you can see behind me. You know, the horns are honking. The cops and sirens are blaring. It's just all the quaint, you know, eccentricities of New York City just making me feel whole, friend.
Yep, that smell, that unique gutter smell. It's like, is it rat pee? Is it human pee?
What is it? It's not trash day today, so we didn't get that.
It's not even trash day. What is the, there's got to be today was a good day version New York City. And that day is definitely not trash day. But we got stuff to get into. Obviously, Trump's legal not woes anymore. In fact, him getting off. A new hire for NBC, not MSNBC, supposedly. A terror attack in Moscow. And then a weird, the weirdest fallout. From the Daily Wire and Candace Owens' breakup, just a new twist on all this that gets really religious and weird. So maybe if you are religious, you can help explain it to us. But we will save that for later. But for now, you guys know what to do. You are sending in your super chats in your chats. We're going to be reading them in the social break. And without further ado, let's get to our news with this.
A lot of things happened today. This is all about election interference. This is all Biden-run things, meaning Biden and his thugs, because I don't know if he knows he's alive. I respect the appellate division for substantially reducing that ridiculous amount of money that was put on by a corrupt judge named Ngoren. He ought to be looked at, seriously looked at, especially what he did with valuations. He's the one, he's a fraudulent valuator.
Yes, the fraudulent valuator. He put that on his LinkedIn, that judge did. That was Donald Trump, who surprisingly had a good day, besides his mood there, because today was the day that he had to pony up $464 million in bond. That includes an appeal for his civil fraud case that he was found guilty of. And he didn't have to pony that money up. No, in fact, at the 11th hour, an appellate court saved his behind, and he has to post only a fraction of that. So let's look at it. This appellate division, First Department, said that Trump can post bond in the amount of $175 million to cover the judgment. Again, as opposed to $464 million. Trump scored a roughly 60% discount on the amount of cash he'll need to pony up to avoid having his assets seized by the state of New York, an outcome one legal expert said was highly unusual. But is that legal expert wealthy beyond his wildest imaginations? And was he president? Probably not. Is he even a he? So Trump also not only has this severely reduced bond, but he's got 10 extra days. Today was the day. It was like, everyone's like, all right, what are they seizing first? Where are we going? Where are we going? We doing Mar-a-Lago? We doing Trump Tower? Nope. He's got 10 more days, and it seems like he does have the money. He was gracious, however, insofar as Trump can be gracious, and said, I greatly respect the decision of the appellate division, and I'll post either $175 million in cash or bonds or security or whatever's like necessary very quickly within 10 days. And I thank the appellate division for acting quickly. Because I have affluenza, which means I didn't know I couldn't do that, officer. A source close to Trump said, quote, "We got what we wanted." Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot more, but just some, you know, I think we need to not gloss over just how je ne sais authoritarian Trump also sounded in that press conference. Like, he needs to be looked at, this judge. Like, not only am I going to take this W, like I got off with 60% discount, but we're going for more. Why don't we look at this judge if and when I am reelected?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the Trump MO from the very beginning, right? This idea that from the very beginning of his life as a presidential candidate, this idea that if you're not, you know, on your knees, groveling, kowtowing to him, you're a problem, you're a threat, you're corrupt, you're evil, you're a deep state, you're whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's generally how he operates around people who don't just bow down to him and do whatever he wants. So the idea that he would call this judge corrupt for doing his job is not surprising. And then, you know, quite hilariously, and you mentioned this, we don't normally get gracious Trump, where he's like outwardly thanking this appellate judge, which to me just means he was having trouble coming up with these funds. And he felt very relieved that the amount of money for this bond was, you know, significantly lowered.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean that he won't have to eventually, should the appeal fail, pay the rest of what he is owed. Again, that was calculated based on what he stole off the taxpayers of New York by lying about how great his assets were and how much they were worth and whatnot. But again, this buys him more time, and it buys him that time with a lot less money. The question, though, remains, as we talked about last week, billionaires don't seem like they want to help him out. Maybe they will now that the price tag has been reduced. But he was also directly asked something that his lawyer, Lena Haba, was asked, which is, are you going to ask a foreign government for this money? And here's what he had to say.
Did you ever accept money from a foreign government to pay the bond or their fines? Or
no, I don't do that. I think you'd be allowed to, possibly. I don't know. I mean, if you go borrow from a big bank, many of the banks are outside of this. As you know, the biggest banks, frankly, are outside of our country. So you could do that, but I don't need to borrow money. I have a lot of money. I built a great company.
Which one? Which company? Okay, so there he is. And Waz, this is an answer he does a lot, which is like, no, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't need to, but it wouldn't be wrong if I did. It wouldn't be wrong. There's nothing wrong with that.
The slickness of that answer is actually a bit underrated. The idea is like, no, I'm good. But however, like, it's not illegal. If somebody were to do that, there'd be nothing wrong with it. And as you know, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, there's a lot of foreign banks, Barclays, like, there's a lot of
you just
banks
start to name on
in America. Like, you could easily do that. That was actually kind of funny, but it's also true. Like, a lot of these financial institutions are multinational, in fact, right? And so, there's something to that. It's just a very slick answer on the part of 45 there.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one he gives all the time, and it's sort of like lulling the American people into the idea that accepting money from a foreign government is like completely fine, even though he did while he was in office. And when he was on the campaign trail in 2016 and 2015, and like, who cares? So China and Saudi Arabia gave me a bunch of money. So I'm not compromising anyway, America first. It's wild. But yeah, he massages the brains of the MAGA base into believing that all of this is A-okay. I'm pissed. I'm just going to be 100. I'm pissed that he got this reduced. Of course he did. There are people currently languishing in jail who have far lesser penalties that they have to pay. They can't come up with that money. Most Americans can't afford a $400 unexpected expense. So Great, cool. We have a justice system indeed. Speaking of the justice system, let's talk about Trump's criminal case. Hey, it's criminal. There could be years in prison, probably not ever. But this is the OG of cases, the hush money case, where Donald Trump, if you forgot about it, is charged with 34 counts of falsifying business records stemming from reimbursements made to Trump's former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, for hush money payments he made before the 2016 election to cover up an alleged affair with adult film star Stormy Daniels. Again, I said the OG of them. It is true. This still hasn't been resolved. The wheels of justice move slowly when you're important. During a pretrial hearing on Monday, Judge Merchan announced that this again is a criminal trial. It'll begin on April 15th in earnest. The jury selection is beginning very, very soon. Trump is super pissed. A number of reasons that he's pissed is that he wanted Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels to not be able to testify in this trial. They are pivotal to the trial and the fact that this hush money and then the subsequent cover up again, which is the criminality part, took place. It's ridiculous to assume that they wouldn't testify. But here's what he had to say about this case.
We have a man who just ruled they'd like the trial to start in 21 days or something. And I don't know how you can have a trial that's going on right in the middle of an election. Not fair. Not fair. It's not fair at all. He knows that too. He's a Democrat judge. He wants to do that because they're all trying to damage Trump as much as possible. It's having the reverse effect, but maybe someday it won't. I don't know.
Someday maybe it won't. The breathlessness. Yes, it's an election year. It's a time to appoint Supreme Court justices before the ones who die have gone cold. So Judge Merchan is pissed at that. Judge Merchan is not taking this lightly. He's not having any of this, that he's being called unfair, saying that you are literally accusing the Manhattan DA's office and the people assigned to this case of prosecutorial misconduct and trying to make me complicit in it. And you don't have a single cite to support that position. Again, that's the New York Supreme Court Judge Juan Merchan. Merchan said also that Trump's attorneys were leveling allegations that were incredibly serious and unbelievably serious. And it was disconcerting the defense couldn't provide a citation to back it up. The judge also pressed blanche on that's Trump's lawyer, on why Trump's lawyers didn't ask for documents more quickly following the first production of documents that were turned over last spring. Again, they're trying to argue that there's some sort of attorney-client privilege here between Michael Cohen and Donald Trump, but they're not officially, we covered this last week, formally asking for that, because that would enable the prosecution to have access to a bunch of private exchanges between Michael Cohen and Donald Trump. So again, they're just slow walking this. Judge Merchan is calling them out on it, saying the people went so far and above beyond what they were required to do that it's odd we're even here. Again, you're slow walking this. This is ridiculous. But again, that's every single case here. However, during the hearing, this is fun. You know, when you're like in a criminal hearing for your own fraud and you're just like, ooh, somebody pinged me. And you're like, let me just quickly check out what's going on. And that's what Trump did. He took to Truth Social. And apparently someone had DM'd him a very beautiful Bible passage. Not sure if you've heard of the Bible. It is a Bible. He bleated, "Received this morning, beautiful, thank you. Quote, it's ironic that Christ walked through his greatest persecution the very week they're trying to steal your property from you. But have you seen this verse?" And I guess he was sent a Psalm 109:3-8. Do I have to read this? "They have also surrounded me with words of hatred and fought against me." Okay, reading Psalm in Trump voice does not work. "In return for my love, they are my accusers, but I give myself to prayer. Thus they have rewarded me for evil for good and hatred for my love, sent a wicked man over him and let an accuser stand at his right hand. When he is judged, let him be found guilty and let his prayer become sin. Let his days be few and let another take his office." I mean, let his days be few. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like, let his days be few. That's all I'm going to say about that. So, Waz, Trump takes time to be like, I am Jesus. Persecution, yeah. Persecution. Beautiful blonde slash Palestinian. We see the connection.
Yeah, anytime you can compare yourself to Jesus Christ himself, you kind of have to do it, right? You can't just leave the Christ comparisons just laying there on the table, friend, when it's just so obvious the connection, right? Trump paying off prostitutes with funds that he got fundraising for his presidential campaign, that's exactly like Jesus Christ dying for our sins. And of course, it's Lent. It's the week of right before Easter Sunday for those who celebrate. Obviously, he has to make this comparison. And is this any different from your high school and college friends who post those ridiculously cringe memes on Instagram about how they even hated on Jesus? And the they they're talking about is their secretary at their job. I don't see how this is any worse than that.
Yeah, you're like, this is about you being a creep. I'm pretty sure Jesus didn't own a golf club that served really bad martinis. In fact, I'm sure if Jesus had to make a martini, it'd be delicious. There wouldn't be random ice floating in a big margarita cup, you idiot. But anyway, we will be following the hush money case. And it is not prostitute, it is sex worker. But it is not sex worker, it is porn star. And she was not being paid for said encounter. Although,
sorry.
She might be
use the wrong P word. My bad.
Use the wrong P word.
I'll stay on top of that.
Grab him by the P word. Serious and fascinating and wild. So let's jump into this.
Today, Moscow mourns. Russian President Vladimir Putin himself among the many lighting candles. After Russia endured its deadliest terror attack in 20 years on Friday, I honestly thought it was a firecracker, said this survivor. But these crackles, they were here. They weren't stopping. There was screaming, panic. 137 people were killed by four gunmen who marauded through this huge concert venue, shooting, throwing bombs, and burning the building almost completely to the ground.
So on Friday, 137 people, including three children, were killed in that terrorist attack at Moscow's Caracas City Hall, according to Russia's investigative committee. But there's a lot more details unfolding as the number of people injured is 182, 121 are still in the hospital. Search for bodies is ongoing. What we do know is the auditorium at the Caracas Hall was about three quarters full when with a crowd waiting to see Picnic, which is a popular band since the Soviet days of the early 80s. But the concert was sold out in a 6,200 seat hall. So some of the audience was still likely getting food or shedding their heavy coats in the cloakroom. And about 7 to 10 minutes before the start of the show, which was scheduled for 8 o'clock, that popping sound of guns rang out and four khaki clad men with automatic weapons opened fire on those in the hall. The Islamic State claimed responsibility first Friday and then again on Saturday on social media channels that they typically use to issue statements. In their Saturday statement, they said the attack had come in the quote natural framework of the ongoing war between the extremist group and the countries they accuse of fighting Islam. That would be, in this case, Russia. They're specifically, it's ISIS-K, which is a Central Asian affiliate of the Islamic State group. ISIS-K has thousands of members and is the Taliban's most bitter enemy and top military threat. The group has continued to carry out attacks in Afghanistan and beyond since the Taliban takeover. I'm sure folks remember they were behind that 2021 suicide bombing at the Kabul airport that left 13 US troops and 170 Afghans dead during the chaotic withdrawal withdrawal from Afghanistan. ISIS-K also claimed responsibility for the bombing attack in Kerman, Iran, that killed 95 people in January at a memorial procession for General Qasem Soleimani, an Iranian general who was killed by US drone strike in 2020. US officials are saying that ISIS-K has long targeted Russia. This is from Colin Clark of the Soufan Center, says that ISIS-K has been fixated on Russia for the past 2 years, frequently criticizing Putin and its propaganda. And Michael Kugelman, excuse me, of the Washington-based Wilson Center said, ISIS-K sees Russia as being complicit in activities that regularly oppress Muslims. I did want to jump down because there was an interesting continuation of Michael Kugelman, who's been speaking out about this, spoke to Al Jazeera, said that Russian foreign policy has been a big red flag for ISIS. He again is the South Asia Institute director for the Washington-based Wilson Center. The Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, Russian actions in Chechnya, Moscow's close relationships with Syria and the Iranian governments, and especially the military campaigns that Russia has waged against ISIS fighters in Syria and through the Wagner Group mercenaries in parts of Africa. Now, that is their rationale and also their particular take on Islam and who is targeting Muslims, right? Obviously, Iran is a Muslim nation. So again, and ISIS is a particular strand of extremist organization, but it's pretty nuts. I mean, there was talk initially after the attack that maybe this was coming from Ukraine, obviously given the war, but there was nothing to back that up. But Waz, here we are again. And I think there's gonna be a lot of fallout from this, but I wanna just kick it to you before we talk about who has been suspected of doing this.
It's obviously horrible what's happened to those people who lost their lives in this attack. And you know, our thoughts go out to their families in this time, because obviously, this is just horrible. However, this is kind of what happens when extremist factions kind of decide they want to deal a blow to the great powers, right? We know these guys, they can't go out in the fields in that region and fight a Russian army or a Russian-backed, you know, Syrian army head up. They can't. Right. They will get their doors blown off, and they know that quite explicitly. And so they feel like how they attack the Russians for, you know, what they see as oppression of the Chechen Muslims and definitely the sort of Islamic State backed forces in Syria. Because pretty much from the start of that uprising, the Russian government has backed Bashar al-Assad,
right,
in Syria pretty strongly. I feel like they've been his strongest ally from the beginning. You know, the Johnny-come-latelys in the US, when they finally decided that ISIS was a problem, they kind of collaborated on, you know, kicking those guys out of that region. But Russia has been heavily involved from the beginning, and these extremist folks feel like, all right, these guys are our enemies, and this is the only way that we see we can hurt them is by targeting their civilian populations at home. Obviously, this is an atrocity. Obviously, it's wholly unjustified, but this is what these type of groups do when they feel like foreign powers, who they have absolutely no chance of beating head to head, have wronged them and their people, and they feel like this is how they, you know, strike a blow.
Right. I mean, I think you pretty much just define terrorism, which is, yeah, non-state actors trying, you know, taking it out on civilians, sort of in an act of desperation or extremism. Four of the 11 who were arrested, I guess 11 were, you know, and again, there will be more unfolding, but it seems that four gunmen have been arrested, but there may have been more. You heard in that report that there were four. It's believed that there more were involved, but again, it's unfolding. But four of the 11 were identified as Tajik nationals, and they've been arraigned and charged already under a terrorism act in Russia, and that carries a life sentence in prison. However, some conditions on how they actually came to that confession are raising eyebrows. A court statement said that two of the suspects accepted their guilt in the assault after being charged with in the preliminary hearing. Though the men's condition raised questions about whether they were speaking freely, there had been earlier conflicting reports in Russian media outlets that said three of the four men admitted culpability. The reason their condition raised some ideas and questions about whether they were speaking freely is that they clearly had been tortured. They had signs of heavy bruising, swollen faces. One guy didn't have an ear because it had been cut off during interrogation. So again, we'll keep following this story. It will be unfolding. Vladimir Putin is still somehow trying to blame Ukraine for this. But it is really scary, Waz. I think to me what stands out is Putin's government is one that Tucker Carlson and the right in this country love. They praise, right? And there is no due process when it comes to what, if you're accused of an act of terrorism, no, you're getting your ear cut off, you're going to be tortured, tortured into confessing, who knows? And that's it, goodbye. This country, at least there is due process and the rule of law. In addition to, as I pointed out on the damage report this morning, if you're Dylann Roof for a white domestic terrorist, you might get a Burger King thrown in with that before you know you actually get charged. But it's that separation that I think those of us who still trying to work on the whole justice system in this so-called democracy, that's what we want to preserve, not the presumption of guilt or even the torturing of, yeah, let's say these people do have blood on their hands. They should be tried and sentenced in accordance with, you know, law, and not what was that in 2 days? 2 days.
Yeah, see, I don't think civil liberties have ever been a specialty of Russian authorities. This probably goes back for about 100 years now. That hasn't seemed to be a priority. However, where I might disagree with you a bit, and where we cede the moral high ground very often, and when I say we, I mean the American foreign policy establishment. Putin's no dummy. He knows he can go on any outlet and say, have you guys ever heard of Gitmo? You think those guys get fair trials with due process, a speedy trial, get lawyers, get released, get any of that? No, they don't. Putin will come out and say, the Americans do this all the time. They had their little CIA black sites. They were torturing the hell out of people at those things. And that's why I feel like a lot of the steps that we took during the quote unquote war on terror has weakened us abroad. Yeah. People look at America as very suspect in their claims to have some moral high ground. When push came to shove after 9/11, we wiretapped the hell out of our own citizens. Whenever we accuse anybody, excuse me, of being a terrorist, they didn't get to go to a court in New York City or Los Angeles or Washington, D.C. We tried these folks abroad, right? And that's not even to speak of, you know, President Obama killing American citizens with drone strikes. No judge, no jury, no court, no anything, right? And so I think that's our problem that we stand in right now, as far as the American establishment, as it relates to foreign policy. They've done so many horrible things. We can't even come out and in good faith explain to people that what the Russians are doing are horrible, because we come up to that line very often.
No, I think you're 100% right. I think that's a really not just fair point. That is the point. And especially if they're Muslim, right? Like that is the difference. When I say Dylann Roof, that dude wasn't brown or Muslim, but when they are, and especially if they have actual ties abroad or to an ISIS or like organization, you're 100% right. I mean, there are still people languishing in Guantanamo. So point taken and great point. Let's take our first break though. When we come back, there is a lot more, including more Bible passages that I apologize for. Welcome back to TYT. Francesca Fiorentini, Waz Nilambre, or Big Waz. Let's jump into this Finally, some corporate accountability in only the way they know how. After months of bad press and very near misses and scary mishaps, the CEO of Boeing, David Calhoun, and other executives are stepping down in what is likely an attempt at just damage control. Just like, just fix your doors, bro. You could stay, but fix things. Anyway, they're leaving. That's right. Stan Deal, president and CEO of Boeing's commercial airplanes unit, will retire immediately as well. Stephanie Pope, the company's chief operating officer for less than 3 months, has taken over leadership of the key division. Let's go, Steph. The company said board chairman Lawrence Kellner, a former airline chief, won't stand for re-election in May, and he's going to be replaced by a former Qualcomm CEO. That guy is Steven Mollenkopf to replace the new board chairman, and he's going to lead the search for a new Calhoun. So, corporate speak, me no speak, corporate speak. They're all just shuffling the deck on their busted planes, but here we go. Boeing obviously has been under intense pressure since early January when that plane door or plane sighting blew off a brand new Alaska Airlines 737 MAX, Investigators say the bolts that helped keep the panel in place were missing after repair work at the Boeing factory. An FAA audit of Boeing's 737's factory in near Seattle gave the company failing grades on nearly 36 aspects of production. I mean, we're talking about like only 25% of the air masks might actually give you oxygen were they to drop. Just like, cool, I'll walk. Last week, the FBI also announced their they're opening a criminal investigation, and that passengers who were on that flight that I spoke about might actually be victims of a crime. In a letter to staff, David Calhoun, of course, had these parting words. As you all know, the Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 accident was a watershed moment for Boeing. It wasn't those other two crashes in 2018, 2019. We must continue to respond to this accident with humility and complete transparency. We must inculcate a total commitment to safety and quality at every level of our company. Again, ironically, Calhoun was appointed to after those two crashes that I just briefly mentioned in the wake of those airline disasters also involving a 737 MAX when they had software malfunction. That was Lion Air and Ethiopian Airlines 2018 and 2019. Killed 346 people after their Boeing software system failed and the pilots were improperly trained on them. Didn't know it was going to automatically take over. Just terrifying stuff. Waz, it's crazy that it took an accident in the United States that claimed no lives when 346 people back in 2018, 2019, and they gave us Calhoun. Now we're gonna get some new suit, but what's the actual problem? Like, meanwhile, we're still shelling out money. They're still charging for bags. Their flights are still late and missing. There's still wheels are falling off of Boeing's. Like, I think we might be missing the actual problem here.
Well, we're not missing the problem, Fran. It's that how do we address a problem that is so foundational to so many of the things that ail our society right now, which is this idea that we need to financialize and, you know, profit maximization, or more importantly, stock price maximization of every single business and entity in existence. And guess what? When those people died abroad, it wasn't a money loser. But because this thing blew up in a way that became so public and was a PR nightmare, now it's time for heads to roll. Because guess what, man? Like, so long as you're keeping the shareholders happy, nothing else matters. Literally, nothing else ever matters so long as the freaking shareholders are happy. It's been well documented that as soon as they did that freaking corporate merger and they became way more a company about penny pinching, cutting corners, squeezing every single dime out of it, and making performance and quality a secondary concern.
Yep.
Everything started to nosedive. But again, when your only goal is to squeeze every dime out.
Yeah.
No matter what. So long as you escape some level of legal culpability in anything that comes out of that, these are the results. How yeah. we change that, I find it, I don't know. Like, it's nice that some actual heads rolled that, like, yes, the freaking Joker who presided over a freaking door blowing off a plane mid, you know, ascension doesn't get to run the company anymore. I guess that's a step in the right direction. But I have a hard time believing that the culture of this company and the sort of processes that, you know, sort of produce these outcomes is going to dramatically change.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of what, you know, what when you learn about a capitalist critique of the economy, you always study the Pinto example, right? That the Ford Pinto, if it was rear-ended in the right way, would explode. And it was cheaper for the company to keep that car on the road, no matter all of the people who were gonna die because of it, because then recall the whole thing. It's the same thing with Boeing planes. And yeah, they suffered some legal ramifications in 2021, but $2.5 billion they had to play out to settle criminal charges. But let me ask you, does this company not then relinquish the right to have to build airplanes, to have us in their airplanes? Like, the FAA has a larger role to play. I feel this way about private healthcare. I think that the private healthcare industry has relinquished the right and should be taken over by, yeah, by the government, by the federal government, because they have lost all credibility in this field where they consistently put profits over people and allow people to die. The same with Boeing. But again, $2.5 billion, yeah, I guess that's kind of a, I guess you had to rent, you had to, you know, Airbnb your summer home for a month or something. You had to rent it out. Like, it's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. All that to say, I also think workers have a role to play here. They are going on, they may be going on strike as they renegotiate a contract this summer. That's going to be crucial. And it's going to be crucial for all of us to remember as we're being gaslit by the media and by everyone saying, wow, these Boeing workers, oh, they're the ones that didn't screw on the door right. BS, man. No. BS. It was a corporate decision. It came from the top down. Pay these workers, make sure that they are given all the equipment that they need. And they don't do, you know, they aren't pushed through the door to make, to speed up the assembly line and cut corners, which is, again, potentially killing us.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about is, you know, if we make Boeing a state-run enterprise, the only entity that could actually take that over, we know why that would never happen. Because, of course, you know, the United States
doing
that would set the precedent abroad, where, you know, a lot of these American businessmen own companies abroad, and that would just be like, oh, these other countries can take over our stuff. Right. It's our job to exploit the resources of others. State actors be damned. We can't have America being a shining example of state-ran entities being the better option. We can't possibly do that. But yes, you know, I guess we'll all be paying attention to what happens with Boeing, because again, I can't say the stress is enough. I'm highly skeptical of the idea that going along business as usual. All you look into all the freaking stock buyback plans that these fools did instead of reinvestment in the product, in research and development, into making this thing better, safer, faster, stronger. That's been the culture of the company. And the people who own it, you know, the major shareholders, they like that system. They like the system where the product gets worse and they get richer. Right. So I have a hard time believing that anything will stop that train.
Yeah, same. Unless Pete Buttigieg has something to say about that. Help us, Pete. All right, let's take our second break. We got more news after this. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to TYT on a Monday. Big Waz, Francesca Fiorentini. Two more stories, very media landscapey. Gross media and less, a little bit less gross, but still gross media. Starting with this.
Look, let me deal with the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
I think our bosses owe you an apology for putting you in this situation. Because I don't know what to believe. She is now a paid contributor by NBC News. Well, I have no idea whether any answer she gave to you was because she didn't want to mess up her contract. She wants us to believe that she was speaking for the RNC when the RNC was paying for her. So she has credibility issues that she still has to deal with.
Yeah.
Is she speaking for herself or is she speaking on behalf of who's paying her?
Okay, Chuck Todd, finding a little backbone. That was NBC's Chuck Todd talking to Kristen Welker about Welker's interview with former RNC chair Ronna McDaniel, who, unbeknownst to Welker, or perhaps simultaneous to this interview, is now an NBC paid contributor. Ta-da! It's come full circle, kind of. We're hiring goons. So NBC has hired Ronna McDaniel as a political analyst. And there was Chuck Todd saying, basically, I don't know if she was just worried that she wouldn't keep this job or who she was trying to protect. I don't know if this was an honest interview or not. Kristen Welker, for her part, said that McDaniel's interview was scheduled weeks before Ronna McDaniel's the hiring was announced, and added that it will be a news interview and that she was not involved in the hiring, which I guess obviously. But apparently the interview did not help her gain footing, that is McDaniel, with the broader network, because you see Chuck Todd aired his criticism, and Chuck Todd rarely sticks his neck out for too many things. But here's a little snippet of that interview with Ronna McDaniel, again, former RNC chair, about her role in the Michigan fake electors scheme, which she was part of. Take a look.
You and Donald Trump were recorded pushing two Republican Michigan officials, election officials, not to certify the results of the election. And on the call, you're recorded as saying, quote, if you can go home tonight, do not sign it. We will get you attorneys. Do you have regrets about that phone call and your actions?
I'm so glad you asked me about this, because I've never had a chance to respond to this. And if you know the course of what happened that night, these two individuals went into a hearing. They voted no. They didn't vote not to certify. They said, you know, we want an audit. There were some problems in Wayne County. They've been consistent. They've been well documented over subsequent elections. And they said, as canvassers, we think we should have an audit before we certify. That's all they asked for.
And then you were like, we're definitely going to get you lawyers. Why would you need a lawyer? Is it because what they were doing was illegal? Is that no? Okay. So that's part of the interview. And that's what a lot of NBC staffers actually have a problem with. Although leadership says there's no problem here. This is Vice President of Meet the Press, actually, Carrie Budoff Brown, who said, quote, it couldn't be a more important moment to have a voice like Ronna's on the team. McDaniel will provide an insider's perspective on national politics and the future of the Republican Party, and hopefully tell us how they're gonna try and steal it this time around. We're just gonna get the inside track, and then we're gonna watch it all. And you know, and as we descend into fascism, we'll be there with balance on both sides. Oh my God. Anyway, before I can get to you, Waz, a couple more pieces here. Staffers were very upset, obviously, as you saw Chuck Todd. Apparently, there's a sign that she was said to be appearing across all NBC news platforms, which a lot of MSNBC staffers thought that meant their channel. It seems like internal communications show that it might not be MSNBC. Here's some anchors actually expressing their anger that she might actually appear on MSNBC as well as NBC. Take a look.
I will say this, I think your interview did a good job of exposing, I think, many of the contradictions. And look, there's a reason why there's a lot of journalists at NBC News uncomfortable with this, because many of our professional dealings with the RNC over the last 6 years have been met with gaslighting, have been met with character assassination. So it is, you know, that's where you begin here. And so when NBC made the decision to give her NBC News' credibility, you gotta ask yourself, what does she bring NBC News? And when we make deals like this, and I've been at this company a long time, you're doing it for access. Access to audience, sometimes it's access to an individual. Mm-hmm. And we can have a journalistic ethics debate about that. And I'm willing to have that debate. And if you told me we were hiring her as a technical advisor to the Republican convention, I think that would be certainly defensible. If you told me we're talking to her, but let's see how she does in some interviews and maybe vet her with actual journalists inside the network, see if it's a two-way, what she can bring the network. So I do think, unfortunately, this interview is always going to be looked through the prism of who is she speaking for.
So that was, again, more Chuck Todd raising some really interesting questions. And then from what I mentioned earlier, again, president of MSNBC, Rashida Jones, has said there is no obligation to book Ronna McDaniel on their shows. Joe Scarborough of Morning Joe, for his part, has said they refuse to do so. We will see, Waz, but I guess maybe your thoughts on the hiring, but maybe also hearing Chuck Todd kind of call it like it is on this one particular aspect.
I think it's kind of hilarious that Chuck Todd is on Meet the Press of all shows crying about a lack of sort of integrity around NBC's news operations. Whenever these people want to come out and sell a freaking war, want to sell some of the most heinous, most ridiculous things that our government is out there trying to do, they've gone on Meet the Press to do so, okay? Mm-hmm. This idea that NBC and their news properties are so pure, if you ever turn the dial to CNBC, which is basically the media propaganda arm of the corporate class, the Wall Street class of this country. Like, this idea that there is some purity of journalistic integrity across NBC's news operation is absurd. Like, I get why Chuck Todd is, you know, personally, this one personally feels nasty because these people, you know, they feel personally wounded by what Trump and his cronies tried to do in 2020 in places like Georgia and Michigan and Arizona. Like, right, he's personally offended by those things. So this one thing gets on his nerves. But I would argue that, MSNBC is so precious, they couldn't possibly have some woman in Michigan who did election interfering, you know, be a paid contributor. Says who? Again, like, Meet the Press, they sold that damn Iraq war. All kinds of freaking lies on that show. Nobody pushed back. Nobody came back and said, whoops, my bad, folks. We shouldn't allow that on our airtime. This information was unvetted. This was nonsense. This was BS. There was no credibility to it. Give me a break. I understand that Chuck Todd is personally offended by this particular form of, I guess you would say, journalistic malpractice, but NBC as, you know, some paragon of journalistic integrity, give me a freaking break. Don't Jim Cramer still work up there?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think what's interesting is that they don't see the kind of conflict of interest that we've all seen about them for so long, right? When they hire children of politicians currently on air, when they hire Jen Psaki, former press secretaries, to the Biden administration on air, when they fire Mehdi Hassan for actually asking questions to Israeli officials rather than buying their line about this genocide hook, line, and sinker, then we ask questions. And then their panties get in a bunch when you've got Ronna McDaniel, which is a lie that we know is a lie, meaning she peddled a lie that we know is a lie, but you can't draw lines in the lies here. Like, we see all your lies. We see all the propagandists that you have hired. So don't expect at least progressives and leftists to sort of like join with you to, you know, protect the media. And he said it himself. I mean, I think this is the line that stuck with me, is it's clicks, man. It's clicks, it's the right. Everyone wants to see Ron and McDaniel, you know, get upset with Chuck Todd. They want to see the bickering. They want their, you know, their little moment. Ron is going to say some weirdo Q stuff and whatever. Like, that is, it is, everyone is still chasing eyeballs and clicks. And so miss me with the we're so integrous here. No, we know what you chase. We know what you don't choose not to report. To say nothing of, yes, the kinds of atrocities that you regularly pass off as normal, like this on assault in Gaza. Look, but let's move on. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say this one last thing. I think Chris Hayes does some pretty decent work up there. I think he's trying his hardest. Rachel Maddow kind of went off the rails with the Russiagate stuff, but I think she's generally trying to do a good job. And over the years, MSNBC has had decent people trying to do some decent news up there. But NBC, yes, Francesca included, but NBC, Comcast, Universal, remember folks, this is a huge company. This idea that they are so interested in the purity and the sanctity of shoe leather journalism and, you know, all of the sort of principles that are attached to that, give it a rest, Shuck Todd.
Yeah, I like how you give him a soft CH, a shuck. Shuck Todd, like we're shucking oysters.
Well, he's shucking in Java up there. That's why I call him Shuck Todd.
Oh, speaking of which, ooh, no.
Oh, yeah. Let's go, Francesca.
Let's go. Okay. We'll talk about this. There's more fallout, of course, of the Daily Wire Candace Owens breakup, starting with this.
Christ is the King, and one day every knee will bow and recognize it because he's not just my King, he's King of the universe. But when you use that phrase to mean that God has abandoned his chosen people, the Jews, through whom he came into this world incarnate, and that he's broken his promises, his covenant with the Jews, you are quoting scripture like Satan does in the Bible.
What? Okay, so that was Daily Wire host Andrew Klavan. And Klavan is a Jew, but he actually converted to Christianity. And he's talking about a phrase, God is King, that Candace Owens tweeted after she found out that she was being let go from the Daily Wire. And that phrase is now being called anti-Semitic. That's right. Wait for it. It's anti-Semitic, supposedly. Obviously not Candace Owens' friendship with Nick Fuentes, known anti-Semite, or Kanye West, or saying that Hitler's nationalism was admirable. But no, saying God is King is anti-Semitic. Here's the tweet that they're talking about. This was, again, just hours after she found out she was no longer with the Daily Wire. She wrote, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all matter of evil against you falsely for my sake." This is, by the way, from the Bible. She didn't write this. "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other. You will not be, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." And then she added, "Christ is King." And this apparently is the problem. I apologize. Wasn't God is King? It was Christ is King. Okay. Now here is Klavan, his full comments on why Christ is King is anti-Semitic. He can't quite get there. Take a listen.
"You know, when I did this, by the way, the priest who baptized me said, you know, Christians won't accept you. You'll still be a Jew. And I said, well, I am. That's my race. I'm a Jew. I'm proud of my race. It's a great race. It's done many, many great things, including write the Bible. And, you know, I am a Jew. But that hasn't happened at all. Christians have welcomed me with open arms, except this Christ the King, anti-Semitic crowd. Christ is the King. And one day every knee will bow and recognize it because he's not just my King, he's King of the universe. But when you use that phrase to mean that God has abandoned his chosen people, the Jews, through whom he came into this world incarnate, and that he's broken his promises, his covenant with the Jews, you are quoting scripture like Satan does in the Bible. You are quoting scripture to your purposes. And that to me is specifically wicked."
What? Christ is king means what? Whoa, okay, whoa. I'm still super unclear, but don't worry, because CEO of the Daily Wire, Jeremy Boring, that's right, that's his name, Boring, has explained it all to Twitter, saying, quote, how is saying Christ is king anti-Semitic? The same way anything becomes anti-Semitic when it's used for the purpose of expressing anti-Semitism. It's like asking, how does a shovel become a murder weapon when it is used to murder someone? This isn't hard. A shovel is not innately a murder weapon. Saying Christ is king is not innately anti-Semitic. It's all about how a thing is used. Then he continued, saying eat some cornbread is not racist if I say it to my three-year-old when she's refusing her dinner. If I say it as a response to X posts by black commentators, I don't like it. It has taken on a meaning beyond what is innate. Okay, and then he keeps going again with some weird religious mumbo jumbo stuff. I believe Jeremy Boring, again, is a Christian himself, but he says, so one must be cautious of how one uses the name of God. God will not be mocked. Invoking him in vain self-promotion or to troll Jews or to attack your political rivals is to carry forth his name in vain. Jesus Christ is king, sure enough, king of heaven and of earth, king of Jew and Gentile alike. Yet a bruised reed he will not break and a faintly burning wick he will not smother. So do not use his name as a cudgel to bash those in whom the light of God yet flickers. Sir, this is a Wendy's. This is the most Wendy's a Wendy's has ever been. Was this is the next level. And what I hate about this entire story is I'm feeling that tingle, and that's the tingle of don't make me defend Candace Owens, which I hate that tingle. I hate that, like, because we all know, again, the real reason that Candace Owens was let go and the real reason she's being called anti-Semitic now as opposed to before is because she's calling out Israel's actions in Gaza, calling them genocide, lamenting at the death of children. Again, if you guys need a refresher, this was back in November. Candace Owens comes this quicker than some friends of mine, says no government anywhere has the right to commit genocide ever. There's no justification for genocide. I can't believe this even needs to be said or is even considered the least bit controversial to state. I hate you for being right, Candace Owens. This is very painful. But Waz, Christ is king. And again, like, none of it makes sense because I actually don't think it makes sense to them.
So if I'm reading what they're saying correctly, one, this is a bunch of fascinating aspects of it. But I think ultimately what they're saying is that we know her problem was with Ben Shapiro. We know it was about her feelings about how the Israeli government is carrying out their war against Hamas. And her invoking Christ as king is clearly a dig at her enemy at the Daily Wire, which is Ben Shapiro, a Jewish man. That's what it feels like right. They're trying to express there. Which is hilarious to me for many reasons. But the main one for me is that the staunchest pro-Zionist people in America are these Zionist Christians who think the Jews should hold or own or whatever, be in control of that land of Israel so that Jesus can come back and ultimately damn all those Jews to hell for not being Christ followers, by the way. But it's cool to be down with those folks because they serve the ends right now temporarily. But if you even peel back the first layer of Christian Zionism, it's anti-Semitic as hell. They think those people are going to be damned to hell because they don't love Jesus, but they need Jesus to come back. So they need those people to be over there in Israel and Palestine. It's just a hilarious sort of jujitsu and gymnastics right. These people have to do in order to even support some of this crazy thinking.
Well, and which is somehow was not anti-Semitic. Like the idea that all the Jews need to own all the land in Israel or in Palestine.
It's totally normal.
That's super normal so that they can die or convert. That's not anti-Semitic just because I want them to die or convert. Well, here, okay, lastly, because I have to play this for you because this guy fascinates me. Andrew Klavan, who I didn't know was a thing. He, I guess, converted before the second coming of Christ. He converted before. And he goes on a little bit more about this Christ is king stuff. But listen to how he does it. He's saying ultimately that God his Christian God has a plan for Jews like Ben Shapiro. And then he throws in Jordan Peterson. I think Peterson's not actually, he's not a Jew and he's not really a Christian. So, but just listen to this last thing.
You know, Christ is love, Christ is truth, Christ is the logos of the moral order. You follow love, you follow truth, you follow the moral order. You will find yourself ultimately at Jesus Christ's door. I don't worry about Ben and Jordan Peterson one little bit. And so when you spit Christ the King at them to insist that they have been rejected by the one who sent them to do the work that they're doing, nah, no, 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 no.
Okay, so he's taking offense at saying Christ is King, Candace Owens saying Christ is King, which she had no other, she doesn't seem like she had another intention about, like, you're saying, they're spitting this at Ben Shapiro for whatever reason. But simultaneously, he's arguing that God, his Christian God, has a plan for Jews like Ben Shapiro to do their work ultimately. Because what? Because Christ is King, according to you. Like, it's so weird. It's which ultimately, and was this is the reason I wanted to watch that whole thing, is to say that anti-Semitism in this time, we've been gaslit to believe it's just in the eye of the beholder. And so long as one person is offended, that means that you did an anti-Semitism, when sometimes there's actually no grounds for it. That being said, Candace Owens is an anti-Semite. Straight up, I don't think that this tweet falls into her documented past of being an anti-Semite.
Look, those people hired Candace Owen to shuck and jive, tap dance, be a troll, put a black face on anti-blackness. There's a lot of money on it. However, she found out really quick, there's a narrow range you get to work within. You don't get to color outside of that line and think you get to still be the black face of cooning on the Daily Wire. It doesn't happen like that. You step out of line even a little bit, they're going to spank you. And again, I really do think these people, they're like, yo, we hired Candace Owens to be a troll. And right, she's trolling us with that Jesus is King. You're feeling it.
But only because she overstepped on yes. Israel. Yes. Big Waz, everybody, where can we obviously listen to you, find you?
Check us out at theringer.com. We got your pop culture, sports needs, very well covered, if I do say so myself. I'm at Big Waz on every single social media platform. And then just check out the Woke Bros every single Friday with me and Nando Vila.
Hell yeah. And the Bituation Room, everybody listen wherever you get your podcasts. Follow me at Franny Fio. There's more news with Cenk and Jordan Yule after this.